Psalm 109. People whom the psalmist has loved have turned against him. He lists at some length, from verse 6 to 19, the terrible things that people wish upon him. He turns to Yahweh, praying that their curses will fall on them instead, and that he himself will be vindicated. Do not expect to find anything here of Jesus' injunction to love one's enemies. But the psalmist's cry to God for protection and justice is in fact quite moving. And that is a theme all through the Old Testament. Please remember, they didn't know Jesus. And he came as such a surprise to people, a relief to many and a threat to many, I guess. So without Jesus, the psalms are doing the best they were able to do. And their views, it was said to you of old, Jesus says, but now I say to you. Yeah. But then what happened, of course, Christianity. What is Christianity? People who decide to follow Jesus, then a lot of the Old Testament comes back in and infects Christianity, and a lot of culture, unrepentant culture, dominates. So where am I Christian? How much? How thick is it? How far does it get in? When you look at any culture that calls itself Christian, or any church that says it's Christian, well, it's a bit of a percentage thing, isn't it? How deeply, how profoundly. The saints, if you wonder what a Christian is, look at a saint. If you look at the rest of us, you see people who are a bit Christian and still a bit either just Irish or Dutch or American or Pommies or or whatever we might be. Or we've gone back in the Old Testament and dragged back ideas from the temple and ideas of God that we learnt as children in our stories, and they're still actually getting in the road because we haven't listened to Jesus when he said, well, that was what they said, but it's not true. This is what it is. God was thought to be like that, but he's not. He's like this. So we end up, where are we? All over the place, I guess, unless we're very assiduous and careful. Well, Psalm 109 begins. A plea. Do not be silent, O God, whom I praise. And all the rest of that page are just, we're dealing with a big theme here, the silence of God, which we all know. You cry to God and you're not heard. You can't, you don't think you're being heard in here. God appears to be silent. So I'll read you some of them just for your prayer. Isaiah 64, Yahweh, will you keep silent? Will you punish us so severely? It's a beautiful psalm, that Isaiah 64, and they're crying out to God to tear the heavens open and come down and do something, and nothing seems to be happening. And that's the psalm of Isaiah that is used at the baptism of Jesus. When Jesus goes into the water, the heavens are torn apart, referring back to Psalm in Isaiah 64, saying God is answering the cry in Jesus. So, but it ends up, that prayer, will you keep silent forever? Will you keep punishing us so severely? Psalm 28, to you, Yahweh, I call, my rock, don't refuse to hear me. If you are silent, I shall be like those who go down to the pit. Might as well be dead. Psalm 22. Oh my God, this is Jesus on the cross. I cry by day, but you do not answer. By night, and I find no rest. Psalm 35. You have seen Yahweh. Don't be silent. Yahweh, don't be far from me. Plea. In Psalm 39, hear my prayer, Yahweh, give ear to my cry. Do not hold your peace at my tears, for I am your passing guest, an alien like all my forebears. And Psalm 83, verse 1, obviously I could do a lot on this and I won't. O God, don't keep silent. Don't hold your peace or be still, O my God. The only point I'm making is that the opening cry of this psalm is a theme that recurs again and again and again, as you'd expect. This apparent silence of God in response to prayer. So, the psalmist presents his case. This is what's going wrong, and this is what he wants God's help in. And we can apply it to our lives in different ways. For wicked and deceitful mouths speak out against me, contending against me with lying tongues. You'd expect that if people are lying about you, you'd be able to cope all right. I mean, if people say the truth about you and it's embarrassing and awkward, then there's not much you can do about that, because you can't say it's not true. You know what I mean? It is true, because that can be quite hurtful. That's why detraction is a bad thing, to be telling the truth about somebody to someone else when the truth is not complimentary, because there's really no way out of that. If someone's telling a lie about us, you'd say, well, they're wrong. It's their problem. Wish we were all as strong as that, but we're not always as strong as that, and sometimes the lie, when it's believed by others, is very difficult to handle. In fact, what I find the hardest, to be very open with you, is I find the hardest, the truth is not so hard, I don't find, personally. Lies, I don't find a problem at all. But when it's half true is the problem. You know, there's a little bit of truth in it, enough for you not to be able to say it's wrong and then just move on. But it's distorted and taken right out of context. So you can't actually defend yourself by saying it isn't true, because there is an element of truth in it. But it's completely misconstrued, and that's a difficult thing to handle. So I guess I'm a bit the same as everybody on that, am I? We find that a bit hard to deal with. Some people even find lies hard to deal with, but you can be helped beyond that. If someone is actually saying something about you that's simply untrue, we do have to find a method and learn to block it out and just say, well, they've got the problem, and then get on, truly, because it's hopeless otherwise. Okay, so anyhow, back to our man. Wicked and deceitful mouths are speaking out against me, contending against me with lying tongues. They beset me with words of hate. They attack me without cause. In return for my love, they accuse me, even while I pray for them. They reward me evil for good and hatred for my love. And when that's in the family, that's very painful. When it's your own children or grandchildren or brother or sister. And I just thank God, we've never had any of these problems in our family. We've got 8 kids. But part of the thing was, well, I'm not done. Well, I know I'll finish it. Mum died and had nothing to leave. And I think that's not a bad way, really. Go overseas and enjoy your own trip before you die, or put it into something and leave your kids bugger all. No, well, anyhow, the fact is we had nothing. So we sat around when Mum died. She had nothing in the bank at all. Because I got the last bit out. She gave me her thing and couldn't even sign the cheque, but I had a pre-signed cheque that she'd given me in case. And there was $114, I think, in the bank. And that was to go towards her burial and whatever, which wouldn't do much to your burial, but anyhow, there we are. So she died with... I said, do you want to die with nothing? She says, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, oh, all right. So that's what we did. And then we got in her will, and we took not the foggiest notice of my mother's will. So, because there wasn't anything to leave anyhow. She left the photos to Jim or something, and then we decided John would enjoy them better, so we gave them to John. And she left this to someone else, and we said, well, look, I've got one of those. I don't really need it. Would you? Yeah, you take that. So... And I'm sure Mum would have loved that. Or if she didn't, I don't know what. But sorry to go on. What did I say about that? Yes, in the family, so often over heritage you get problems, don't you? People are worried about what happened, what happens. Give it away, give them to them. If they want it, let them take it. You've lived all this time without it. The psalmist has presented his case. Now the curses are invoked against him by his accusers. This is what they say, he says in prayer. Appoint a wicked man against him. Let an accuser stand on his right. Now, here's an interesting point for you. The Hebrew for accuser is Satan. That's where we get our word Satan. Satan in Hebrew, Satan, means an accuser. That's not a bad thing to be, all right? Any court has an accuser and a defender. So that's it's the dramatic figure, and that's why Satan is called Satan, because he's the accuser. And then it gets a lot of bad press for different things. But that's the word. Let an accuser, a Satan, stand on his right, and when he's tried, let him be found guilty. May his pleading be reckoned a sin. May his days be few. May another seize his post. May his children be orphans and his wife a widow. So they're all very friendly people to him. May his children wander about and beg. May they be driven out of the ruins they inhabit. Nice types. May the creditor seize all that he has. May strangers plunder the fruits of his toil. May there be no one to do him a kindness, nor anyone to pity his orphaned children. May his posterity be cut off. May his name be blotted out in the second generation. In other words, his kids have no kids. That's the end of it. May the guilt of his father be remembered before Yahweh, and don't let the sin of his mother be blotted out. Let them be before Yahweh so continually. May his memory be cut off from the earth. So these are the kind of friendly little things that are being whispered over the phone. He did not remember to show kindness, they're saying about him, but pursued the poor and needy and the brokenhearted to their death. He loved to curse, let curses come on him. He did not appreciate a blessing, may it be far from him. He clothed himself with cursing as his coat. May it soak into his body like water, like oil into his bones. May it be like a garment that he wraps around himself, like a belt that he wears every day. So with all those things being said about him, now the psalmist pleads with Yahweh. He turns the tables, he says to God, not very loving, but he says, may that be the reward of my accusers from Yahweh. What they want to happen to me, let it happen to them. Of those who speak evil against my life. But you, Yahweh, my Lord, act on my behalf for your name's sake. Because your kindness is good, deliver me, for I'm poor and needy, and my heart is pierced within me. I am gone like a shadow at evening. I'm shaken off like a locust. My knees are weak through fasting. My flesh has become gaunt. I'm an object of scorn to my accusers. When they see me, they shake their heads. Help me, Yahweh, my God. Save me according to your kindness. Let them know that this is your hand. You, Yahweh, have done it. Let them curse, but you will bless. Let my assailants be put to shame. May your servant be glad. May my accusers be clothed with dishonor. May they be wrapped in their own shame as in a mantle. With my mouth I will give thanks to Yahweh. I will praise him in the midst of the throng, for he stands at the right hand of the needy to save them from those who would condemn them to death. So the positive side of that psalm, I presume, is he is longing for, that's fair enough too, longing for Yahweh's care on him. He doesn't know any better than to turn the curses back on his enemies, which of course, as you know, psychologically, quite apart from anything spiritual, is giving them too much power. If we actually, I don't have to tell you that, Jesus said it often enough, if I try and get revenge on you for hurting me, I'm giving you control over my life, really. I'm reacting to your curses. So I'm letting you have the, not only hurt me, but destroy me from within to turn me into the same kind of person you are. So it's only common sense, but it's also spiritual sense never to respond